Apparently no one had told Susan that she was married to a man with these dangerous personality traits. As far as I can tell, she received little or no guidance about dangerous personalities and what you can expect from them. Still, somehow, she perceived that she was dealing with a dangerous personality because she began to write about it in her journal, sensing that her life was in danger. Susan Powell's whereabouts remain unknown. Most likely she was killed at the hands of her husband. Susan perceptively had an inkling of how dangerous her husband was based on his behaviors. She just didn't have reliable confirmation and an authoritative guide to tell her to run, get out, get help, now. But you do. When dangerous personalities join forces. Ever wonder why prisoners, when they are released, are forbidden to associate with other convicted felons? It's because experience has taught us that when dangerous personalities associate with other dangerous personalities, the risk to society and themselves increases. Here are some historical examples of what happens when dangerous personalities buddy up. Frank and Jesse James were notorious train and bank robbers in the 1860s who wantonly killed and murdered their way to infamy. Like the James brothers, Robert Leroy Parker, Butch Cassidy, and Harry Alonzo Longbaugh, Sundance Kid, along with the Wild Bunch gang, were train robbers and murderers in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow, Bonnie and Clyde, were bank robbers and murderers, and nowhere near as nice as they're portrayed in films. Charles Manson and his collection of sycophants he called his family stole, robbed, and killed without hesitation or remorse. Angelo Buono Jr. and Kenneth Bianchi, the Hillside Stranglers, were two cousins who raped, tortured, and murdered women and girls ranging in age from 12 to 28 in the late 1970s in California. Charles Ng and Leonard Lake in Wilseyville, California, sadistically killed somewhere between 11 and 25 victims, including two babies in the 1980s. Some of these events were videotaped inside the torture chamber they had built. Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole together killed perhaps more than 100 individuals throughout the United States in the early 1980s and over a 7-year period. It was Toole who admitted killing 6-year-old Adam Walsh in 1981 with a machete. Adam's father, John Walsh, became the host of the noted television crime-solving show America's Most Wanted, and the Adam Walsh case raised awareness about the risks posed by dangerous personalities and spurred passage in the United States of the Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act of 2006, which led to the creation of the National Sex Offender Registry, among other advances in the effort to protect children from predatory personalities. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold killed 12 students and a teacher and wounded 23 others before committing suicide at Columbine High School. John Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo randomly shot and killed 13 people in the Washington, Virginia, and Maryland area in 2002 using a sniper rifle and while concealed in the trunk of their car. But that's just a few. It's bad enough when these personalities act alone, but when they collaborate, they truly put us in danger, as they tend to feed and nurture each other to do even more harm. In the case of Muhammad and Malvo, they catalyzed each other into a 3-week killing frenzy that terrified one of the most well-protected capitals in the world, Washington, D.C., and for a while they seemed unstoppable. Putting it all together, I hope this chapter has helped you understand how to use the checklists in combination to assess those whose behavior gives you pause or is causing you or others to suffer, whether you're hearing it on the news or experiencing it in your life. Bottom line, when someone has features of more than one dangerous personality, these combined characteristics potentiate one another, making this person much more complex, much more unstable, and potentially more dangerous. The higher such individuals score on the checklists, the greater their complexity, instability, and dangerousness. Even if a person scores low across the board, you're still talking about someone who will aggravate, irritate, frustrate, frighten, or otherwise drain your cup. In short, a dangerous person you want to avoid if you value your psychological, mental, emotional, physical, or financial health. While the checklists won't predict precisely what someone will do, they give you an idea of the trajectory of that person's behavior. No one's behavior can be predicted. We're all too complex for that. But remember, the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And since dangerous personalities are flawed in character as well as in personality, chances are they're not going to take steps to improve themselves. So the trajectory of their behavior is likely to remain the same, or worsen, depending on circumstances. If the checklists aren't handy and you need to assess someone quickly, ask yourself the following 5 questions. 1. Do they affect me emotionally in a negative way? 2. Do they do things that are illegal, erratic, unethical, or defy social norms? 3. Do they do things that are exploitative or manipulative? 4. Do they do things that are dangerous? 5. Do they do things impulsively with little control or with unwillingness to delay gratification? The more yes answers you have, the more likely it is that you're dealing with someone who combines traits of more than one type of dangerous personality. The checklists will then help you pinpoint more specifically the type of person you're dealing with and where this individual falls on the spectrum of severity. Another tip. Turn to the words that describe sections in chapters 1 through 4 and circle the words that feel like the right match for this personality. Those words alone have helped many people validate that what they're experiencing is similar to what other victims have experienced. In his landmark work, The Gulag Archipelago, Alexander I. Solzhenitsyn, who shed so much light on the ghastly abuses of the Soviet Empire and its leaders, cautioned that there can come a point where a human crosses the line into what he called evil. There was a time when Ted Bundy wasn't interested in killing college students, but at some point he crossed that line and he never returned. Many may ask how or why it happened. Some may remember when this person was not that way. These are valid points of curiosity, but you and I live in the present, and all that matters is what this person is like now, and whether he or she presents a danger to you and your loved ones. That is all I care about, and that is my purpose in writing this book. Chapter 6. Self-Defense Against Dangerous Personalities. You probably know the story of how to boil a frog. If you put it in boiling water, it'll leap out, but if you put it in tepid water and slowly increase the temperature, the frog won't even know it's slowly boiling to death. At the FBI, when we interviewed people who'd been victimized by a dangerous personality, I heard versions of this refrain over and over. By the time I realized what was going on, it was too late. Our ability to adapt is a powerful survival mechanism, but with dangerous personalities, we may boil to death before we realize we're in hot water. Fortunately, we're a lot smarter than those frogs. We can learn how to be alert to those who can hurt us and take steps to protect ourselves. Still, I have to be honest, until I attended the Utah Police Academy and the FBI Academy, I really didn't know how criminals behaved. Television had given me limited insight, but it certainly didn't look into all 4 of the dangerous personalities we've explored in these chapters and how those personalities behave. I wrote this book to share what I've learned from experience through decades of training and study, and from talking to victims. I wanted to share this with you because I know that you are not going to have the training I received, nor will you have a police officer or mental health professional constantly at your side to help you. None of us do. There are thousands of suicide call centers around the country, and there are many battered spouse centers. but there's no center you can call when you have suspicions of a dangerous personality. Just as it's up to us to look before we cross, so it's up to us, individually and as parents or managers, to be vigilant, to have situational awareness, to assess for threats and danger, to take appropriate action to prevent dangerous individuals from entering our lives, and to deal with them if they do. I don't want you to be that frog that thinks everything's fine, not realizing that the temperature's rising by 1 degree every hour. This book is just part of the equation. There are other great books out there, including J. Reed Malloy's classic, Violence, Risk, and Threat Assessment, Fatal Flaws by Stuart Yudofsky, M.D., The Criminal Personality by Samuel Yockelson and Stanton E. Samenow, Without Conscience by Robert Hare, and The Gift of Fear by Gavin De Becker, along with others listed in the bibliography. Many people can help, and I hope you'll turn to the selected resources section that follows to see some of the various organizations prepared and willing to assist you. The more you learn and the more you reach out for support, the better equipped you'll be. What follows are my personal insights based on decades of law enforcement and criminal profiling experience. Please consider these ideas, keeping in mind that my perspective is that of a former law enforcement officer and criminal profiler. It is not the same perspective as that of a mental health professional. You are wise to consider what they have to say also. This is my contribution to the literature and my opinions. This is not and cannot be the last word on the subject. First things first. Reality. When people are dealing with a dangerous personality, the usual well-meaning advice they hear is generally some version of, try to talk to him, try to get her some help, try to work things out together, give him another chance. Nicole Brown Simpson, former wife of O.J. Simpson, did all of that. She's dead. I think this is fine advice when you're dealing with run-of-the-mill interpersonal problems, but when it comes to the four dangerous personalities in this book, things are a little different. First of all, as mentioned in previous chapters, these personalities usually don't think there's anything wrong with them. So your efforts to introduce them to that reality usually get this kind of reaction. I don't have a problem. You're the problem. Or, you don't know what you're talking about. Or, who told you I have a problem? I'm fine. Or, who have you been talking to? What have you told them? There are other reactions. These are a few of the nicer ones. I'm not saying you shouldn't try to talk. Maybe they're low enough on the behavioral spectrum that they may be willing to seek help without lashing out at you. But don't be surprised if they say they'll seek help but then they don't, or if they go once and never go back. I say this because I've talked to scores of people who tell me this is what happened. Remember, these individuals are flawed in character and personality. So narcissists may explode at you with rage because they see themselves as perfect, and you are suggesting otherwise. The emotionally unstable will lash out because that is this individual's nature. The predator definitely doesn't see anything wrong with himself and may become violent on a whim at the mere suggestion that he seek help, while the paranoid personality may now see you as a confirmed enemy and trust you even less. This is why I say that offering the suggestion to seek help from mental health professionals or a counselor is a good approach for most troubled people. But with dangerous personalities, you really have to be careful, because doing so can be very dicey. For example, if you choose to confront them and suggest that they see a professional, know that this will have to be done delicately, minimizing any offense, and be aware that there may be serious repercussions. I think it's worth trying only if you believe you can do it safely. Only you know your situation. Don't let anyone cavalierly talk you into doing it, and then you're the one who gets her face punched, or you have to live in hell for the next month. There are professionals who specialize in dealing with personality disorders and criminal behavior. Some are listed in the selected resources chapter. Always remember that fixing people is both an art and a science best left to professionals, but even they can't fix some people. Dangerous personalities, as I've described, lack introspection and dedication to improving their behaviors. So it will be an uphill battle that should be fought by the pros, mental health professionals, not you or me. And even then, there are no guarantees of success, as these dangerous personalities are practically immune or resistant to change. Be especially careful with personalities who have crossed the line from irritating and noxious to the more virulent, unstable, or criminal side of the spectrum. People like Ted Bundy, Henry Lee Lucas, John Wayne Gacy, or Jerry Sandusky don't line up at the local mental health clinic wanting to confront their demons. They don't because they don't think they have any, even as they kill or rape. It's a whole different ball game when it comes to getting them some help. Once they've crossed into the criminal arena, or they are irrational or unstable, it's time for you to distance yourself, get out, and get away. It sounds harsh, but it's the best advice I can give you from a lifetime of experience. Things we can do every day. Over the years, I have talked to experts about what we can do every day to protect ourselves. That's one of the most important questions we can ask. The list below is not all-inclusive, and there are many books out there that go into greater detail about dealing with toxic or dangerous personalities. Nevertheless, I hope you'll find some guidance here and that these tactics will help you as they have helped others in similar situations to stay safe. Gain knowledge. Louis Pasteur, the French chemist and microbiologist who, among other things, gave us pasteurization, said with some authority, "Chance favors the prepared mind." He was right. By now you've read the previous chapters and are familiar with the four dangerous personalities and the accompanying checklists. And many times I've heard people say, "Wow, I know someone exactly like that." Now that you've been sensitized to the personality traits of these dangerous personalities, you're better prepared to deal with these individuals and improve your chances of staying safe. These checklists were created not just to help you assess those individuals in your life that cause you concern. They're also there to educate. They can serve as reminders of how these individuals manipulate, pull emotional strings, insinuate themselves into people's lives against their will, abuse others physically or mentally, lie, cheat, steal, or engage in risky behaviors that wreak havoc, or place others in danger or actually victimize them. Even if you never re-listen to this book in its entirety, at least periodically review the four dangerous personalities checklists to remind yourself that these are the people to avoid. And why? Don't just look. Observe. When I was young, I went to the beach every weekend in Miami. There were many tourists there from Europe, and their toddlers often bathed naked on the beach, as was their custom. Often I'd see a man nearby dressed in street clothes taking photographs. I thought he was a professional photographer with his big bag of lenses and 35mm film. He took a keen interest in photographing the tourists, but often he'd come closer to photograph their children as they played in the surf or built sandcastles. I didn't think anything of it at the time. I was more interested in his cameras, which I knew my parents couldn't afford. What I was seeing at age 11 was a photographer. What I was not observing was a pedophile in action. I was blind to what was going on because no one had taught me what to look for. No one had pointed out that this is how a sexual predator or child pornographer behaves. It wasn't until years later, while I was studying sex crimes, that I realized what I had seen, but not observed, because I was mentally unprepared. After some horrible crime occurs, how many times have we seen a reporter ask a neighbor of the accused what kind of person this individual was, only to hear some variation of, "He was a nice guy." Nearly 40 years ago, when investigators were digging up the 26th body from under John Wayne Gacy's house in Illinois, his neighbor, true to form, told reporters what a great guy he was. Nothing has changed. People see, but they don't observe. In fact, it may be getting worse. The next time you're in a public space, look around you. People now have their faces buried in their smartphone screens, often to the point of bumping into others, and their ears are obstructed by headphones or earpieces. It's tough to see or hear a stalker as you're walking to your car if your eyes are glued to a screen, you're on a call, or you've got music cranked up. But look how many people do precisely that. And the predators out there know it. Let this book and the checklist serve as your informal training to prepare you to observe. Your powers of observation can go a long way toward keeping you and your loved ones safe. As the renowned 19th-century French criminologist and biometrician Alphonse Bertillon said, one can only see what one observes, and one observes only things which are already in the mind. Trust your feelings. How does this person make you feel? In Chapter 4, I wrote about hearing my gun rattling as my body shook in recognition of a social predator. We have an internal alerting system that tells us we're in danger, if only we will listen to it. Be alert to how others make you feel. This is a key criterion often missed even by experts. Tune into your physical reactions to people and situations. Gut clenching, hairs prickling, skin flushing, queasiness, anxiousness, or just a vague unease. Be grateful for these feelings because they're messages from our brain to our body. Be careful, this person could be a dangerous personality. Be thankful for that gift of fear that Gavin De Becker so eloquently wrote about in his book of the same title, a book we should all read. Know the difference between niceness and goodness. Serial killer Ted Bundy offered to help young women carry their groceries. Sexual predator and serial murderer John Wayne Gacy literally clowned for neighborhood kids. Convicted pedophile Jerry Sandusky held sports programs for troubled youth. They could all act nice. These individuals usually know how to do that well. But behind closed doors, they were not nice or good. They were evil. One problem with society is that we're inclined to attribute goodness to people who don't deserve it. As I've mentioned in previous chapters, dangerous personalities know how to be nice, but they're not good. When I was very young, my mother taught me a Spanish version of this wisdom. Ventalleros no son buenos, which means, those who do nice things for advantage or for gain, opportunists, are not really good or nice people. Years later, I appreciated Gavin De Becker's variant, niceness is not goodness. We need to recognize the difference and teach our children this valuable lesson. Niceness comes and goes and can be displayed for selfish reasons. Goodness comes from the heart and is part of a person's essential nature. It's the ability to consistently think and care about the needs of someone else, as a good parent does for a child. Good people can sometimes have a bad day, but then they return to their baseline of goodness in thought, word, and deed. Niceness is really about actions anyone can perform. Goodness is about character and intentions. When we assess for goodness, we're assessing the intentions behind behaviors. Teach your children the difference. Control space and distance. Use distance as a barrier to keep you and yours safe. Walls, fences, gates, doors, car windows, parental settings on a computer, all are there to help keep you safe. Sometimes we ourselves have to create that distance and barrier. You don't want a person too close to you at the ATM machine or following you to your car. Nor do you want your intimate partner arguing with you 3 inches from your face. Space and distance, as well as barriers, can help keep you safe. Remember, predators try to control your space, body, mind, money, or emotions. Space and distance can help keep them from achieving that. Control time. Slow things down. Dangerous personalities use time to take advantage of you. They create urgency or want you to act quickly to draw you in, to get married, hire them, sign the contract, write the check, let them in the door, or adopt their beliefs. Slow things down. Create time buffers so that you can think and reflect without pressure. This is a clue. If time is being used to pressure you, if you feel you are being rushed, then something is wrong. When people really care, they don't want you to hurry. Dangerous personalities may also use time to wear you down, using persistence, repeated arguments, or even incrementally more serious threats. If you sense someone is trying to wear you down, distance yourself or put a more definitive stop to your interaction. This is where empathetic allies you can trust can be of assistance to rally around you if need be. See Make Supportive Alliances, discussed later in this chapter. Cut the emotional strings. If you are around a person who is pulling your emotional strings or trying to, something's wrong. Caring people don't do that. Dangerous personalities are social puppeteers. They know what to say and do to tug at your emotions. They may threaten to leave or to commit suicide or will tell you that they'll be devastated if you don't do this or that. Or toddler-like, they may sulk and cry and whine, trying to get you to do what they want. Just stop and remind yourself, when your emotions are being pulled, it means that someone is intentionally pulling those strings. This is manipulation. You don't want to spend your life being manipulated by someone. Take control of your life away from dangerous personalities who act as puppeteers. Recognize what they are doing, set boundaries, and walk away from those who do not respect you by pulling your emotional strings. Assess how much, how often. When it comes to dangerous personalities, what behaviors we observe and how those behaviors are displayed often give us clues as to where people are on their individual dangerous personality continuum or spectrum, as well as provide insight into how dangerous they are or whether they are a combination of dangerous personality types. See Chapter 5. This means everyone gets a pass if they have one or two behaviors that stand out once in a great while. After all, as I've mentioned, anyone can have a bad day. But if the behaviors noted in the checklists happen repeatedly, if these behaviors increase over time, or if they are affecting you emotionally or physically, take heed. Remember, when it comes to dangerous personalities, permissiveness on your part is seen as either weakness or as a green light to continue doing more of the same. Know that time and location matter. I once worked a case in Tampa where a young woman was found raped and strangled in the bushes just 12 feet from a major road. Analysis of her modus vivendi, how she lived, revealed the following. At some point during the night, she disappeared. She ran out of cigarettes. We found all the cigarette boxes in her apartment empty. She walked to an all-night convenience store two blocks away, where she bought cigarettes and left at around 11:10 p.m. The store surveillance camera captured her making the purchase and exiting alone. Sometime after that, while walking home, she was attacked. Defense wounds on her arms, raped, semen on and in her, and killed. Ligature around neck. According to the convenience store clerk who had served her, she had gone to the store to buy cigarettes or other items many times in the past. What was different this time was the time of day. Usually she went to the store around 5:30 p.m. after work when it was still light out, and there were plenty of people and cars going by. This single change altered her situation from hard-working young woman running an errand after work to murder victim. You can go from being a low-risk victim to being a high-risk victim just by changing the time of day and your location. Interpersonal violence increases between the hours of 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. When alcohol and drugs are involved, violence escalates. We've known these facts since the 1960s, yet people seem oblivious to this reality. This doesn't mean you shouldn't go out after 8 p.m., but it does mean you have to be extra careful. A simple act at 11 in the morning can turn deadly at 11 at night. Make yourself uninviting to dangerous personalities. Predators often pick their targets by how they walk. When you're out and about, look around, pay attention, look at people directly, let them know you see them, or even that you're onto them. Walk with purpose and decisively, good arm swing, not passively. Predators love passive, inattentive walkers. Face traffic, don't let traffic come up behind you. When walking to your car, avoid being on the phone and try to keep one hand free. You should avoid alleys or being too close to the street if walking alone. In rural areas or where there's a lot of vegetation, look for places someone can hide. Check 'em out. Due diligence is a term used in business that entails verifying whether people are who they say they are, whether they're trustworthy, or whether there are any issues. Whether we call it due diligence, checking them out, verifying trustworthiness, or seeing if they are on the up and up, we need to do this with those we meet in our own lives. It's amazing how many people bring someone home, let a stranger babysit their child, or allow someone to handle their finances without checking references. People get married only to find out later that their spouse is still married to someone else, is a wanted criminal, or, as we saw in the Clark Rockefeller story in Chapter 1, is a complete imposter. People should spend more time getting to know whom they're dating or marrying than they do researching their next kitchen appliance. Does this individual's personal information, name, where she grew up, where she went to school, check out? Have you met her family? Does she really work where she says she does? Has she been married before? It seems like a lot to do, but by now you've heard many stories of how trusting people have been taken advantage of or violated. If you fail to do due diligence, to actually get to know people, then you do so at your own peril. Don't wait too long. Don't wait too long to act. If you sense something negative, even early on, act on it. Maybe Natalie Holloway sensed something was wrong toward the end of the evening in Aruba, but if she did, it came too late. By then her friends had left and she was in a foreign country surrounded by male strangers she had just met. As you'll recall, she was never found. Maybe Travis Alexander felt something was wrong early in his relationship with Jody Arias. But he delayed taking action for too long also. When it comes to dangerous personalities, you may not have much time to act. If you don't know what to do, distancing yourself is probably the best course of action. Dealing with dangerous personalities. Obviously, the best thing we can do is avoid them. But sometimes we can't. Perhaps they find us, or we find ourselves with them for a variety of reasons, including travel, marriage, and work, or maybe one is a relative. Whatever the reason, if you think you're in the presence of a dangerous personality, take care of yourself first and foremost. I hope these strategies will help. Who is this? Use the dangerous personalities checklists to get a better feel for whom you're dealing with. If you can't do that, then at least run through your memory of the checklists and try to see where this individual fits. Doing this will give you insight into how bad your situation really is and what protective measures you should take. Having said that, however, never delay if you feel you're in danger. If you see a man with a gun in a hallway, you don't need these checklists. Just run. But sometimes, as I've noted in previous chapters, it isn't so obvious. For example, when smooth-talking swindlers get your grandmother's bank account information. Complex situations. You may know that your husband is a liar and a cheat and that he's abusive, but issues such as family and finances can really complicate matters. Yes, he's a dangerous personality and he scores high on 2 of the dangerous personalities checklists, but perhaps you find it hard to leave for valid reasons. If it's a work situation, maybe you need the money, maybe the nasty boss is a relative. Or maybe you can't leave until you save some more money. I have heard all of these things many times, and I understand. Be realistic about your situation so that you can deal with it. Frankly, the more complex the situation is, the more help you will need. It may also take longer to extricate yourself, but if things escalate, especially the threat level and the violence, you may have no choice. Every military pilot I know wants to save his aircraft, but at some point there's nothing more a pilot can do, and he has to eject to save himself. The same can happen to us in life. If it's an employment issue, see if you can transfer or work a different shift. Talk to HR or management and build supportive alliances. But in the end, you may have to quit. Incidentally, these are all things that some people who worked for Apple's co-founder Steve Jobs eventually were forced to do. Read Walter Isaacson's biography, Steve Jobs, and you will appreciate that while Jobs was a visionary, he was also mercurial and pathologically nasty to his own people for decades. He made many of his own employees emotionally distressed and others physically sick. Even his long-term partner, Steve Wozniak, finally had to quit. He couldn't take Jobs's nastiness anymore. That may be something you'll have to do also because, as these Apple employees found out, making millions wasn't worth their mental and physical health. Nothing is. Quitting a job is obviously easier than quitting a marriage where there are kids and finances involved. Or what if you're a teenager and you actually want to be emancipated from your parents because they are toxic, involved in drugs, or clearly fit any of the dangerous personality descriptions we've discussed? Getting out can become really complicated, but there are ways. If your situation is complex, you truly will need help, and more than any book can give you. You need professionals to step in and guide you, assist you, and lend a hand. Or maybe things are so bad that social services or the police need to intervene. By all means, use the checklists to confirm and validate what you're experiencing. Then it's time to talk to a professional and get them involved. Don't ever hesitate to go to a mental health professional or even to the police with this book in hand and say, "Please look at this checklist. Because my intimate partner, my husband, my wife, my parents, my friend, my child does all these things." It is so much harder to ignore someone who comes in prepared with documentation. And while we're on the subject of documentation, catalog the behaviors. While I was stationed in Puerto Rico, I had a boss who was verbally abusive to everyone below him. He screamed and yelled at me and just about everyone else. After he lashed out at me a couple of times, I learned my lesson. So every time he came to my office or called me into his office, I made sure I had my personal journal with me. As soon as he started yelling, I would begin to write. Soon he stopped, because he knew I was writing down what he said and how he said it. I learned that for some people, writing down their words and actions can often change their behavior or prevent further harassment. But some people aren't just screamers. Some are more combustible or violent. In those cases, I have some recommendations. Write down everything they do by date and time, especially if these are recurring events. You are doing yourself a favor, and it may save you later on, whether the situation's happening at home or at work. Something so simple as emailing details of the event to yourself preserves a record that may assist you in the future. If someone lashes out at you, slams a door in your face, slaps you, hits you, lets the air out of your tire, stalks you, or begins to harass you over the phone, write it down somewhere. Time, day, what happened? I always go back to the example of Nicole Brown Simpson. If only she had kept a private journal of how many times O.J. harassed her, called her, broke into her apartment, slapped her around, threw her to the floor, beat her, and on and on. What if Nicole had gone to the police or the state prosecutors with a journal full of entries and said, "Please do something about this"? I would like to think that things would have turned out differently for her. Don't ever assume that police or law enforcement records will be enough. They won't. We have a responsibility in building a case also. I've talked to many women who were saved in their divorce proceedings because they walked in with a journal full of entries of how their husbands abused or stole from them. Remember, a written journal will always trump someone's memory in any court or a formal proceeding. The last thing an attorney on the opposing side wants is to see a spouse, worker, or business person who dutifully wrote down all the details. Case over. Make supportive alliances. The more features you see on the Dangerous Personalities checklists, the more you need to reach out to others to make or deepen supportive alliances. Make sure that everyone in your family knows how you're being mistreated, or what kind of person you are dealing with. Tell your neighbors, tell your bartender, talk to your coach or gym teacher. Make sure your friends know what it's like to be tormented or mistreated by this individual. You want people on your side calling, checking in, visiting, being vigilant, and validating your experience. There may come a time when they may actually have to step in to help. Remember the story I shared in Chapter 1 of the woman who was compelled to sit on the floor with her children? Incredible as it seemed, this was finally validated when a friend who had been clued in visited and witnessed it firsthand. Resist isolation. Any person who seeks to isolate you physically is a potential danger. If you enter into a relationship, a group, an organization, or a cult, and you sense that this person is trying to isolate you from family, friends, co-workers, or people you feel comfortable with, you are dealing with a dangerous personality. If people care for you, they want you to flourish and be happy, to be with your friends. If they want to keep you from others, and they have all sorts of ways of achieving that, including using guilt or shaming your friends and family, just be aware that dangerous personalities use isolation for control. Everyone from Jim Jones to Ted Bundy used isolation to control their victims. Avoid it, if possible. This also includes avoiding getting into vehicles with strangers or with those whose intentions may be in question. Once you're in a car, the potential for danger increases dramatically, while your chances of escape decrease significantly. Any attempt to force you into a vehicle should be resisted with screaming, yelling, kicking, biting, and scratching by any means, even if the person has a handgun or a knife. The greater danger awaits you in the vehicle, not on the outside. And I repeat, even if the person has a gun, you should avoid getting into that vehicle. As a former law enforcement officer and FBI special agent, I cannot stress this enough. Set boundaries. My father worked for years at a hardware store where the owner was a bully, narcissistic and emotionally unstable. He screamed at the staff, berated them, threw things against the wall, and even screamed at customers. But he never treated my father that way. When I asked my father why not, he said, "Because I told him on the first day, don't ever talk to me like that." People will often do what you let them get away with. Set boundaries that are rigid and not up for modification. A no must be absolute with these individuals. Give them an inch, they'll take 10 miles. You must set clear boundaries about what is and isn't permissible and persistently defend them. Interestingly, the emotionally unstable personality actually does well with structure, rules, and routines, so boundaries may be helpful there. Once you've established those boundaries, live by them. They are your red line never to be crossed. If the person repeatedly crosses those boundaries, you will have to take action at some point. Otherwise he or she will continue as before to abuse you, drain you of energy, try your patience, make you emotionally or physically sick, or place you in danger. Avoid manipulation. Often people focus on setting boundaries against victimization, but fail to set them against manipulation. Yet manipulation is frequently the prelude to victimization, as these personalities will up the ante repeatedly, wearing you down, asking for special treatment or favors. They will be late. They will make you wait. They will ask you to change your schedule. They will want you to accommodate them over and over. Don't reward bad behavior. When the narcissist finds out that the meeting started without him and he is ignored when he finally comes in, he'll arrive early next time. But if everyone waits for him and fawns over him once he's there, he'll repeat his behavior. Some will say, "Isn't this like tough love?" No, not really. True love, altruistic love, has healthy boundaries imbued with respect. There's nothing tough about it. It's only tough for the dangerous personality who doesn't like boundaries, who has no sympathy, and who doesn't respect others. It's only tough because for the selfishly narcissistic, the emotionally unstable, or the predator, everything that respects boundaries and dignity is tough. Give children respite and positive outlets. These innocent souls must be protected as much as possible from dangerous personalities, and that includes parents or partners. If children can't be removed from the situation, the best hope is to give them opportunities to be away from home and in places where they can escape, excel, and feel safe and happy. They need the opportunity to spend time with a loving relative or caregiver in whom they can confide. Get therapy, if possible. Get involved in activities at school, play sports, work with animals, or immerse themselves in the creative worlds of art, reading, or music. Let them see what normal life is like, a life without constant fighting, bickering, or threats. I dealt with a family where the children were schooled at home, and the father had features of the predator and narcissist. It wasn't until those kids were 15 or so that they realized what normal was. That is not fair to them. It's our job to help children understand that abuse in all its forms, physical or psychological, is not normal or acceptable. When in danger, act. Sometimes a dangerous personality exhibits such a high level of toxic, unstable, risky, or criminal behavior that those close by or who are involved with them are in serious danger. Whether it's financial, emotional, psychological, or physical danger, once these individuals have crossed into that mode, the dangerous side of the continuum or spectrum, immediate action is necessary. At this point, it really doesn't matter how you got into the situation. You have to distance yourself immediately or extricate yourself somehow from that relationship. Here are some strategies for dealing with that immediate threat. Act. If your body, your gut, or your mind is saying get away, then do so. If apologies are needed later, you can make them if need be. But if you feel threatened in the moment, try to get away. Don't wait. Any threats of physical harm or any attempt on the part of a dangerous personality to control your body, mind, space, money, or those you love should be a warning to act immediately. Be cautious. Don't attract their attention if possible, but get away. Think. If this is a highly dangerous personality, you may be safer not talking to this person about what's happening and focusing instead on getting to safety. As I've said, these personalities can lash out at you. If you sense a high degree of danger, telling them they need help or confronting them to the point of escalation is not in your best interest. They may become violent, come after you, destroy property, clean out your bank account, take the children and vanish, show up at the office with a gun, take hostages, attempt suicide, or any number of other violent actions. So think first about how you can leave, exit, or extricate yourself safely. If you must talk to them, do so calmly. Try to do it near a door or exit. Alert your network of family members and friends. If things escalate, if you feel increasingly threatened, or if the situation is deteriorating, activate your network. Have them stop by and visit unannounced with greater frequency. Let them know they are to call you every day, and if you don't answer the phone, they should stop by or call the police. Yes, it gets that bad sometimes. Seek help from professionals. If you haven't reached out to support agencies, faith-based organizations, clergy, therapists, attorneys, police, crisis centers, social services, or helplines, do so now. Now. You need a supportive team and a safety net. Please don't be embarrassed, and don't wait. The 911 emergency services, police, fire department, ambulance were created precisely because all of us at some point need immediate help. Don't face them alone. If you must talk with an abuser or a criminal but fear the person might unleash on you, get a mental health professional, family member, or friend to be there with you with cell phone in hand. Or call the police and tell them you want them standing by just in case. They will come. Most police agencies have learned that domestic violence is a critical issue that needs to be addressed promptly. Plan your exit strategy. Ensuring safety is paramount. I've talked to people who've spent months planning their exit from a relationship with a highly dangerous personality, camouflaging it completely. For example, they might set things up so it seems like a normal dinner time, telling the person they need to run out to buy something and not coming back. Or they may come back at some point later with a friend to pick up belongings. When it comes to your safety and that of your children, do what you have to do to safely get away from a dangerous personality. Raise escape money. If you need funds to draw on, if you must leave quickly, if you sense things are bad and going to get worse, prepare financially for the escape. Do what you have to do, including selling personal items to get enough money to get you out of danger. A woman I know in Colombia did this by taking pennies, every day from her abusive husband until she could afford a bus ticket for herself and her daughter to return to her own family. Address financial matters. If you feel there's something fishy about a financial deal or something doesn't seem right financially, start asking questions and delay decision-making or issuing that check or revealing that credit card number. Whatever you do, don't move forward alone. Get others, preferably a qualified professional such as a banker, an accountant, or an attorney, to assess the situation or look at what you're investing in or contemplating doing and ask them if it is a good deal. Spending $400 on an attorney is far better than losing $40,000 to a dangerous personality. Expect the Great Awakening. One thing that happens to those involved with a dangerous personality is what I've come to call the Great Awakening. People often give up years to these individuals. Most are disappointed. But they're so invested that they just continue to try to work things out, until finally they realize that their hopes for this relationship will never be fulfilled. That is the Great Awakening. That moment when you finally realize nothing more can be done for this individual, you are suffering and it is time to let go. Remember that you aren't alone. I've been there. People feel foolish, like they've been used, are living a lie, or can't trust anyone. Some turn their pain inward, blaming themselves. That's why therapy is always useful at this point, if you can get it. But please don't feel that you're alone. All of us, in one way or another, have experienced something like this. Claim and maintain distance. By now you've probably sensed a theme in my advice, and it is that distance can be very effective. You are correct. And I make no apology as I am mainly concerned with victims and their loved ones. Experience has taught me that rarely do dangerous personalities get better, and that they can have devastating psychological, emotional, financial, and physical effects on us. More often than not, when we distance ourselves from danger or from those who hurt us, we stop hurting. This is where I differ from many others. I have talked to too many victims to prattle, as others do, about trying to work things out when your well-being is at risk. I am persuaded by the wise words of the late Swedish diplomat, author, and second Secretary General of the United Nations, Dag Hammarskjöld, who, having lived through the carnage of World War II, said, "He who wants to keep his garden tidy doesn't reserve a plot for weeds." If the weeds won't go away, it's time to move to a new garden. A special note. If you think you may be a dangerous personality. Over the years, I've written articles about dangerous personalities. Invariably, someone will write in and say, in essence, "I recognize many of those features and behaviors in myself." If that's the case, I want to be the first to congratulate you on your honesty. Now that you see those features, seek help from a mental health professional who is an expert in dealing with your particular behaviors and who can help you. Learn to cognitively distance yourself from your own behaviors that in the end also put you at risk. Where do we go from here? I hope that listening to this book has given you insight into dangerous personalities and some tools for keeping them from hurting you. Life is a gift to be treasured, not spent with a yoke around your neck, catering to a toxic person. When we lived in small villages where everyone pretty much knew each other, it was easier to spot these personalities. When we migrated to cities, doing this became harder. But it's not impossible. We have an obligation to ourselves, to our families, and to our community to be safe. We achieve that with education, with vigilance, and by sharing information, but first we must help ourselves. By listening to this book, you have taken a great step forward toward your own safety and that of those you love. There are many more books out there that will also help and educate you. I hope you'll avail yourself of them through the bibliography. I believe in treating others with dignity and respect. I've always tried to do that, even those I put in prison for terrible crimes. We should all treat each other with respect, but that doesn't mean allowing others to abuse or victimize us. This book was written in part to help you validate when you're not being respected, when you're being abused, when you're being violated, and when you're in danger. You are now better equipped to spot these individuals before they hurt you. Fortunately, most of the people you'll meet and interact with in your daily life aren't dangerous personalities. For the most part, people mean well and care. But I know that in time you will run into a dangerous personality because there are millions of them out there. When you do, please remember my final words to you. You have no social obligation to be tormented or to be victimized, ever. This has been an Audible Studios production of Dangerous Personalities, written by Joe Navarro and Tony Sciarra Pointer, narrated by Stephen Hoy, producer Mike Charzik, copyright 2014 by Joe Navarro. Production copyright 2014 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.